Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham. And you just heard an overture. You actually heard the overture from the film That's Entertainment from 1974. And the reason we played that is because I have Richard Skipper here. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Donald. How are you today?
I'm good. And Richard is here to run down his 12 favorite show tunes or movie songs, because we have a combination of show tunes and movie songs. And the That's Entertainment overture was on your list. So I thought it'd be kind of appropriate to play that before we started talking, since it's an overture. We'll get to the 12 favorites in a minute, but why don't you fill the listeners in on your background, where you grew up, how you got into performing? I know you then eventually made the move from South Carolina to New York. So fill us all in on that.
Well, I grew up in South Carolina, small town, Conway, South Carolina, just outside of Myrtle Beach. That's the gateway to Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. I grew up on a tobacco farm. I come from a large family. My father was one of 11 kids. My mom was the oldest of, fasten your seatbelts, 16.
Oh, Lord.
So I come from a large family. Mm-hmm. But they were not my audience. I would seek out an audience everywhere I could find it. Mm-hmm. And I was a product of 1960s and 70s television. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching the television variety shows and the television spectaculars. Watching these shows, that was the world of show business that I wanted to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And by the time I arrived in New York in 1979, that world truly did not exist. That was just on the brink of cable television starting to implode or explode, depending on how you want to look at it. The world of entertainment was changing. In the overture, That's Entertainment, I chose that because in 1974, when That's Entertainment came out, there was a huge nostalgia craze that was sweeping the country. Not only that was on the heels of the MGM auction, right. And I think the MGM auction was the impetus for this film being made in the first place. Mm-hmm. And when these items were being sold off, and it really put a spotlight on the films. But when you think about this, Donald, it's very interesting. That's Entertainment came out in 1974, and it was only 20 years after Gigi. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a moment.
Right.
And imagine, is there any type of a film compilation that could come out right now that could celebrate something, a final film that happened 20 years ago? And I don't think that we have that type of film arc anymore. Mm-hmm. So it was great that that was happening. A lot of autobiographies were coming out and biographies. There were a lot of books about the movies. It was just an incredible time. Shortly after that, and one of my other songs is going to be coming up a little later, and that was the theme from New York, New York, mm-hmm. Which was an homage to those old films. And of course, we didn't have DVDs in those days. Mm-hmm. We didn't have VHS. When you saw these films, first of all, when I saw That's Entertainment, it was the first time that I had seen many of these images on a big screen. You had to wait up and see everything on the Late Late Show.
Right.
That tells you how old I am.
Well, I join you because I remember those days. Okay. So how did you eventually get to New York?
Well, very interesting story. In 1974, mm-hmm. I was 13, and I was reading a book called The Magic of Believing by Claude M. Bristol. Mm-hmm. And in the book, Claude Bristol says, set your mind on a goal like a homing pigeon and go after it with dogged determination. Mm-hmm. I happened to be reading this book on August 5th, 1974. I closed the book and I went in and I said to my mom and dad, 5 years from today, I'm going to New York. And they looked at me as if I was speaking in tongues mm-hmm. or a foreign language. They just could not wrap their brain around the fact that their son, who had never been anywhere, didn't have really any skills beyond book smarts, was going to go to New York City and try to pursue a career as an actor. Mm-hmm. I stuck to it. And every year on August 5th, I would go 4 years from today, 3 years from today, 2 years so on, until the day arrived. And mm-hmm. I arrived in New York on August 5th, 1979, with $500 in my pocket and big dreams. And that's all I had.
And you made it, obviously.
And I made it. I made it. I made it.
What was your first gig? I mean, what were you doing when you got there?
My first survival job. Right. I got a job, but my first full day in New York on August 6th as a messenger. At 55 Water Street, down in the Wall Street District of New York, which was a great job to get for coming to New York because it gave me a chance to get to know New York City. But my first acting job came 3 weeks later when I auditioned for a show called No, No, A Million Times No, which was a hillbilly melodrama. I walked in. I was fresh off the turnip truck. I had just come from South Carolina. I played a character named If He Can. And it was the perfect casting for this young kid who was just arriving in New York with his eyes wide open. And that's how it all began.
I know you have a lot of stories about all the different people you have interacted with and worked with. But eventually, because people may know you from your talk show, the show you did. So talk a little bit. Eventually, you got to that, which is now available. You did that for like 2.5 years, which
I'm
is now
still
available.
Doing that.
You're still doing it. So that's still
going on.
Yeah.
Just before COVID, I did a live show in New York City called the Richard Skipper Celebrates, which was like a talk variety show. It was a throwback to Merv Griffin, and I had 5 guests on each show. From the world of Broadway and film and television. I've been very, very fortunate with the connections that I've made over the years. So I was able to tap into my friends and really bring in some major names to do the show. And so with each person, and I had a 5-piece band, I would bring that artist on. They would do a song. We would sit and chat for a little bit, and then they would do a song. And then COVID hit. And it was like, what's going to happen? Everything in New York shut down. And when COVID hit, just before COVID, I had reached out to Leslie Ann Warren. And I said, I'd like to do, I'm going to do this talk show. And my original idea would be that it would just be a verbal talk show over the phone. And she was my first guest. And then COVID hit. And I eventually turned into this live virtual series, and I've done right now almost 900 shows.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yes. That's amazing. That is really amazing.
But I'm ready to rejoin the human race.
I know exactly.
I feel like I've been holed up in my studio that I've created in my home. And it's taken me down a whole path that I never even imagined that I would be doing.
Because your career has been kind of all over the place. You conquered the world of cabaret. I know you were a multi-MAC winning artist, which is really terrific, and a Bistro Award winner in New York, which if people don't know what those are very, very important awards for cabaret performers in New York City, which is terrific. But before we delve into some of the things you have coming up, because I know you've got some interesting things that you have planned, let's jump into your list of 12 favorite show tunes. And start talking about those. Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the beginning and let's just go through them.
Okay. So we are going to hear first that you first picked Over the Rainbow.
That's right.
From The Wizard of Oz. And tell the listeners why you picked this.
Well, again, being that kid who grew up watching television, there were the annual showings of The Wizard of Oz every year. And this movie resonated so deeply with me that even after I moved to New York, again, before cable took over, and there were still the annual showings of The Wizard of Oz, I would hear from people that I went to high school with because they so identified that movie with me. And so to this day, when people see things that remind them of The Wizard of Oz, they call me, they reach out to me. There's that connection with it. So that's why I chose this. It was such an integral part of my growing up.
So let's hear it right now from the original movie soundtrack. We're going to hear, of course, Judy Garland singing Over the Rainbow. Mm-hmm.
dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you
We just heard Judy Garland doing Over the Rainbow from, of course, The Wizard of Oz. And your next choice is one that was, I found very interesting. We're going to move to Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, but you have picked something from the 1965 Cinderella. And tell the listeners what you chose.
I chose Impossible, It's Possible. Celeste Holm and Leslie Ann Warren. Growing, and again, this was an annual showing for 10 years. It showed every year around my birthday. It was always in February. And interestingly enough, when I moved to New York, I was upset that they were no longer showing this on television. So I, one day, I went in the white pages of the phone book. Remember those?
I picked up
the phone book and I found Celeste Holm in the phone book. I called her. She was listed as C. Holm. Mm-hmm. And I called her and we had this wonderful chat. Years later, Celeste Holm and I became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, my husband, Celeste, shared a birthday. We shared birthdays together. We had many parties at our home. Her and her husband, Frank, were in the audience at my shows all the time in New York. That was one of those manifesting moments where you say, you can't believe that this is happening. And then with Leslie Ann Warren, a few years ago, they restored that version of Cinderella. And when I found out from the producer, who happened to be a friend of mine, who was behind the restoration project, that she was going to be coming to New York to do a possible quote-unquote book signing event, I said, there's no one but me that could do this. And I begged, and I begged. He said, okay, it's yours. And she was one of my first real big live interviews. I'll never forget the day that she called me. And just to introduce herself, I guess, before committing to doing this with me. And from the very beginning, she said, it has to be you. I couldn't believe that I knew so much about this. And she's remained a good friend of mine.
Oh, and good.
Like I said, I reached out to her when I did my first show on my virtual series. And I went back and did a big celebration of her on her last birthday. And Pat Carroll, who played Prunella, also became a good friend of mine. So it was just like years later, you know, I could not believe that I had that connection with all three of those.
So let's hear it right now from the 1965 version of Cinderella. We're going to hear Leslie Ann Warren and Celeste Holm with Impossible, It's Possible, as we are running down Richard Skipper's 12 favorite show tunes.
Cinderella?
Who are you?
I'm your fairy godmother.
How beautiful you are.
I'm made of all of your most beautiful dreams and hopes and wishes.
Oh, fairy godmother. I have only one wish just now, to go to the ball. And I know it is impossible.
Impossible? Bah, what's a fairy godmother for?
To make my wish come true.
If you wish it hard enough. Now let me see. You'll need a coach, and four horses, and a coachman, and a groom.
Is it possible to get those things by wishing for them?
Well, the sensible people of this world will say, fal-de-ral and fiddle-dee-dee and fiddle-dee-faddle-dee-foddle. All the wishes in the world are poppycock and twaddle.
Aren't they?
Not always. The sensible people will also say, fal-de-ral and fiddle-dee-dee and fiddle-dee-faddle-dee-foodle. All the dreamers in the world are dizzy in the noodle.
And aren't they?
Not always. Especially when there is someone who loves you to help you. Now, to work. For a coach, I believe I see Pumpkin over there. That will do very nicely.
A pumpkin?
I see you have four pet mice in a cage. They'll do nicely for the horses.
Mice? For horses?
Mm-hmm. Now let me see. Something's peering at us from under that shrub. Oh, yes, it's a fine fat rat with whiskers and his brother. They'll do very nicely for the coachman and the groom.
Dear fairy godmother, it all seems so impossible.
Impossible! For a plain yellow pumpkin to become a golden carriage. Impossible! For a plain country bumpkin and a prince to join in marriage. And four white mice will never be four white horses. Such fal-de-ral and fiddle-dee-dee of courses. Impossible! But the world is full of zanies and fools who don't believe in sensible rules and won't believe what sensible people say. And because these daft and dewy-eyed dopes keep building up impossible hopes, things are happening every day.
Impossible.
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 And remember how very, very hard I am wishing.
Impossible. For pumpkin to become a golden carriage. Impossible. For a plain country bumpkin and a prince to join in marriage. And four white mice will never be four white horses.
They will.
Such fal-de-ral and fiddle-dee-dee of courses. Impossible.
But the world is full of zanies and fools who don't believe in sensible rules and won't believe what sensible people say.
Impossible. Things are happening every day. Look.
Oh, it is a golden coach and four white horses and a coachman and a groom.
You are going to the ball. Dear, of course. How thoughtless of me. There!
Oh, fairy godmother, how beautiful. I am dressed like a princess.
And here are your slippers.
They are made of glass.
Put them on.
They fit perfectly.
You are ready for the ball. But there is one thing you must remember. You must leave before the stroke of midnight, for the magic will last no longer.
I will remember. Oh, fairy godmother, how wonderful it all is. It's possible for a plain yellow pumpkin to become a golden carriage.
mice are easily turned to horses. Such folly, roll and fiddle-dee-dee, of course, is quite possible. It's possible.
For the world is full of zanies and fools who rules and won't believe what sensible people say.
And because these daft and dewy-eyed dopes keep building up impossible hopes, impossible things are happening every day.
It's possible.
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 It's so funny with that Cinderella, because so many people are such diehard Julie Andrews fans that they only think the real television version is that one. And they don't realize how really fun and terrific the Leslie Ann Warren version is. Because they're both, I mean, to me, they're both very worthy of looking at.
Oh, absolutely. And I think Brandy's version is worthy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very interesting how each time that this show is done, it's never the same. Even when it went to Broadway, and I happened to go with Leslie Ann Warren to see it on Broadway, because that was part of that big weekend when they did the restoration event. But the interesting thing about the Julie Andrews version is that it was a one-night only event.
Right.
And thank God it's now available, and they restored that as well, thanks to technology. But with Leslie Ann Warren, it was shown every year. And it's interesting, I asked Leslie if it was a difficult thing for her to try to pursue her career when she was trying to do these edgier roles. And every year, 18-year-old Cinderella would pop up. She said she was delighted by this. And it was just great that audiences to this day still resonate this. And people call her their Cinderella.
Right.
So many baby boomers grew up seeing this year after year after year.
Right.
And like The Wizard of Oz, I don't know of any other show other than Peter Pan, possibly. And Peter Pan even did not air as many times as this version of Cinderella.
Well, we are going to stick to the movies for your next choice. And even more interesting choice, because it is a song that is not from a musical. It is Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's. So why did you pick this one?
It won the Academy Award the year I was born, number one. It was sung by our best man at our wedding. It was also a favorite song of my grandmother's, my grandmother Skipper. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother said shortly before she passed away that every time you hear this song, I'm nearby. And so to this day, when I hear this song, I tear up. And it's amazing. In the strangest places, where it just, I was out the other night and I was walking through a club and Moon River was playing. And it's just there. It's always. And as I think I said to you when I sent you the list, these songs truly are the soundtrack of my life.
So let's hear it right now. We're going to hear Audrey Hepburn doing Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Style someday, old dream maker, you heart breaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way to drift. To see the world, there's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend.
very friend. Oh, river.
One of the things I love about Moon River is not only that it's an incredibly wonderful song, it's such a simple song, but at the same time, it's a song that has so many layers and depth to it. And it's also a song that is so beautiful to be interpreted by so many different people. You know, it's a song that virtually every singer can put their own stamp on it and make it their own and still make it a wonderful song. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, do you have a favorite version beyond?
I actually do.
The Andy Williams version, but
right. I actually love the Nancy Lamott version.
Oh, so do I.
You know, one of the great New York cabaret singers who passed away much too young. But her albums are terrific, and her Moon River just gets me every single time. I just love her version of it. But we're going to make the big leap from Breakfast at Tiffany's and movies to Broadway in a very big way. With a song from MAME. So what did you pick?
It's Today, Angela Lansbury. I actually opened my show with that song because the very first show that I ever did with our community theater in my hometown was MAME. No, I did not play MAME. I did not play Patrick. My audition was probably, and I talk about this in my show, I don't know how much time we have here, but it was one of the most god-awful auditions in the history of auditioning. But it was one of those moments where I got on stage and finished my song, to give you the Reader's Digest version, and the director, Joe Greer, said, we'll be in touch. And that was enough for me. The very fact that he said, we'll be in touch, told me that I got the part. and I left. And in those days, again, telling my age again, we had one phone in our home, and it was one of those wall phones that was on the wall in our kitchen with a long cord. And I would not let my mom or my sister stay on the phone very long because I was waiting for that phone call. And for 3 weeks, I waited for the phone call that obviously did not come.
Right.
So because the phone call did not come, someone that was cast to play Mrs. Upson, Molly Davis, who was teacher's aide in our school, this was community theater, she saw me and she said, are you going to be at rehearsal tonight? And I said, he must have lost my number. So I showed up at the first rehearsal. I was there before anyone else got to the theater. And when he got out of the car and he saw me sitting there, the look on his face could stop a clock. He said, Ricky, I was Ricky Skipper in South Carolina. He said, Ricky, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I was waiting for your phone call. And he said, Ricky, I don't know how to tell you this, but you didn't get the part. And I said, well, you just told me. That's how you tell someone.
Right.
Says, but you're here. He says, why don't you just hang out and see how tonight goes. And as they were handing out the sides, and for those who don't know, the sides are those parts, those lines specific to the character. There was a messenger that had two lines. It was a walk-on part. And someone yelled, give it to Ricky. Mm-hmm. And so he said, well, do you want this? And it was as if he had given me a leading role in the show. Mm-hmm. I was so excited by the prospect of having this part in the show that I showed up at every rehearsal, even though I wasn't needed. And I eventually ended up in some of the chorus numbers and I got into the show. And that's how it all began for me.
And I have, from your various stories you've already told us, you just have this way of kind of manifesting these things. It's you know, you proclaim that you're going to move to New York when you turn 18, and you do.
And you get there
and you land a show within a few weeks. And here you're just so convinced or so determined that you're going to get into MAME that you show up to rehearsals, even though you haven't been cast. And lo and behold,
I get cast.
In the show.
I get a part and I'm in the chorus.
Well, we are going to hear not Ricky Skipper singing It's Today. We're going to hear Angela Lansbury singing It's Today from MAME.
Light the candles, get the ice out, roll the rug up, it's today. Though it may not be anyone's birthday, and though it's far from the first of the year, I know that this very minute has history in it. We're here.
It's a time for
We're going to stick to Broadway for our next song. And it's also a song sung by a wonderful Broadway leading lady who didn't do a ton of musicals. She did a lot of plays as well. But one of the most unique performers, not only just as a performer, but also as a singer. Her vocals are very different from most people. And that is Tammy Grimes. So what? Tell us the song you picked.
I Ain't Down Yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tammy became a good friend of mine as well. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time together, her latter years. But this was the second show that I auditioned for with the theater company. Mm-hmm. And I read that there was a part for two brothers. So I figured, well, I could play a brother. So I showed up to play the brother. But I ended up getting cast. I was 17 by this time. Mm-hmm. And I got cast to play Roberts, the butler. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Linda Simmons, the director, one night, and I said, why did you cast me in this? I just want to know. She says, anybody who had worked that hard on two lines in MAME deserved a chance. And she took a chance on me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and the audience, I would walk out on stage, I'd deliver a line, and the audience was on its feet. They were screaming. I got such laughter in the theater. And that was the first time that I heard that I had a real part that I could work on and mm-hmm. create a character around. So it was a lot of fun. And I just thought it would be a perfect song for this.
And it describes you.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So we're going to hear Tammy Grimes from the Unsinkable Molly Brown doing I Ain't Down Yet.
I ain't down yet.
You're down, Molly. Holler, Uncle.
I ain't never shouting Uncle to you or nobody, because I ain't never down.
Come on, Molly. You're tuckered. Why don't you quit?
Sure, I'm tuckered and I might give out, but I won't give in. How can anybody say that I'm down? Look, I'm thinking. I'm thinking very hard how to break through. Maybe here, maybe there, maybe no place. But there'll come a time when nothing, nobody wants me down like I wants me up. Up where the people are, up where the talking is, up where the joke's going on. Now look here, I am important to me. Ain't no bottom to no pile. I mean much more to me than I mean to anybody I ever knew. Certainly more than I mean to any Siwash Yazzy hampers like you guys. Go ahead, break my arm. Me say uncle, hoot. Doesn't make a bit of difference for you to keep saying I'm down till I say so too. Did you ever try stepping on a piss ant? Well, there's one now. Jumping, stumping, thinking you got him, thinking he's quit. He don't think so. There it goes. And you can be positive, sure I'm as good as any piss ant that ever lived. Oh, I hate that word down. But I love that word up, because up means hope, and that's just what I got. Hope for someplace better, someplace I don't know, cleaner, shinier. Hell, if I gotta eat catfish heads all my life, can I have them off a plate just once? And the red silk dress, when there's girl enough for me to wear one. And then someday, with all my might and all my main, I'm gonna learn to read and write. I'm gonna see what there is to see. So if you go from nowhere on the road to somewhere, and you meet anyone, you'll know it's me. I'm gonna move from place to place and find a house with a golden stairs. And if that house is red and has a big brass bed, I'm living there.
Well now, who do you think you are?
I can be anybody. I can be a queen if I wanna be.
We've just been wrestling with a queen, if you please. Would recognize her with all that dirt on her knees. And with her head and golden toes, and that contraption she calls her nose. A queen can never be queen without any throne. So here's the fanciest throne that you'll ever own. Here is your scepter, here is your crown. Please sit down.
Well now, you think you look like a queen? Then go ahead and walk like a queen.
Go on and march, march, march.
She's queen, queen of the lard pale. Watch her marching by. Now don't forget to hold your head away up high
to show that you know you got a
Well, we now turn to another Broadway show, which is actually a show that I did in community theater way, way, way back when I was very young. And it is a song from Oliver. And tell listeners what you picked from Oliver.
Who Will Buy, which is one of my favorite songs from the show. What role did you play, by the way?
I was one of the boys who I always ended up every show I did as a kid when I was doing here it was called Civic Light Opera. And every show I did, I always ended up being the understudy, which was really nice because I could be in the ensemble and not have to worry about carrying the show. So I would be the understudy Oliver. I'd be the understudy Winthrop and Music Man, which was just fine with me. It was a lot less pressure and I could still have a lot of fun. So gave me all my, my theater experience and my love for theater. So, why did you pick Who Will Buy?
This was the last song that I did with the Theater of the Republic before I moved on. I did one more show in South Carolina before I came to New York, mm-hmm. and that was Broadsod, which was a completely different change of pace from the frothy musicals that I had done with the Theater of the Republic. But it was the last show that I did, and it was just such... I had auditioned again. I auditioned to play Noah Claypole. And I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And but they put me in the chorus. And on the second performance, the guy who was playing Noah Claypole got food poisoning, ended up in the hospital, and they called me and said, "You're going on tonight."
Wow. So how did you fix getting that whatever it was into his food? I'm just curious.
I had nothing to do with it. It's the manifestation thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Janet Mayer, God bless her, called me up and said, "Do you think you can do it?" And I said, "Come and pick me up." And I went to the theater and I just walked around on the stage, getting a feel for the stage and getting a real strong sense of playing the role. Because as you know, Noah Claypole is an incredibly physical role, is the Undertaker's assistant and the whole interaction with Oliver. So it was just a great moment. I went on that night. They didn't even put in those days. I mean, it was South Carolina. They didn't even put an insert in the program. But I'm happy to say that he got a great review that night.
So we're going to hear Who Will Buy from Oliver. And we are with Richard Skipper doing his 12 favorite show tunes.
See it at my leisure whenever things I swear I could fly.
Time's too bright.
Me, oh my, I don't want to lose it. So what am I to do to keep the sky so blue? There must be someone who will
So now that we've got to the last show you did before you made the trek out of South Carolina, I think we should take a little bit of a break and talk about this year you're celebrating, is it 43 years in the
44
this year. Yeah,
yes.
Which is really terrific. And you have an upcoming show that's appropriately landing on August 5th. Tell our listeners about that, because you sent me all the info for it. And I'll make sure that we put a link on the website so people can get tickets to see it if they're going to be in Provincetown, right?
Hope so. I'm going to be in Provincetown. And I opened this show again before COVID. And I opened on the 40th anniversary of my coming to New York. I took the show to my hometown in South Carolina as the Theater of the Republic was celebrating their 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And then the last time that I performed in Provincetown was 10 years ago. And, you know, I've had this career, as you know, performing as Carol Channing. For 20 years, I performed as Carol. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that I will be performing in Provincetown as myself.
Oh.
And because the show is The Magic of Believing, which goes back to Claude Bristol's book, I'm making the show really centric about my years in Provincetown. Again, the first time I went to Provincetown was in 1989. And have you ever been to Provincetown, by the way?
Many years ago, many, many years ago.
Well, the first time I arrived in Provincetown, I arrived in August in the midst of Carnival, mm-hmm. and I stepped off the bus and there were rainbow flags everywhere. And it was just this incredible feeling in the air. And there are all these incredible artists and performers in Provincetown. It's an artist town. Mm-hmm. And so night after night after night, I would go and see these different shows. I saw Jimmy James, and I saw this incredible performer named Randy Allen, and and there was a guy called Big Ed. There were so many phenomenal entertainers that I saw, and I kept saying, I want to perform here. I have to do this. And so several years later, I got booked in Provincetown. My first night in Provincetown, the first show that I did there, was a comedy of errors. Everything that could possibly go wrong mm-hmm. went wrong. The guy that I was performing with hired a musical director who could not play the piano. And it was everything. He raved about this guy. I get there with my music, and every song I would put in front of this guy, he would say, do you have something else? Do you have something else? And then I realized he couldn't play the piano. And I walked out on stage after this horrible overture that he played, and I said to the audience, "Now you know what killed Judy Garland," and brought the house down, because the audience knew at that moment that I was with them, that mm-hmm. I knew that I was not naive to what was going on. And so I was able to play along through it. I was able to get through it. And we made it through that show. And, you know, and as time went on, I would come back as a headliner. I headlined Cabaret Fest the very first year that they did that. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, the last time I performed in Provincetown was 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So be coming back on the anniversary of my coming to New York. And what sets my show apart is before the show starts, we pass out question cards for the audience. So the audience will ask me questions. And I take these cards throughout the show, and I have no idea what direction they're going to take me in. Mm-hmm. I encourage everyone to Google me. There's a lot out there about me. Mm-hmm. Just look me up, and whatever they want to know about people I've worked with, places I've been, events, certain things, it's an open book. And then I tie it together with the songs that we're doing in the show. And it's a lot of fun. It's a real audience interactive experience.
So you will be at the Post Office Cafe and Cabaret in Provincetown on August 5th. So if anybody is going to be out there, you can follow the link here on the webpage and you can get tickets. I'm also going to make sure we include a link to your website so people can find you and find out all about you. And I know you mentioned this is your first time appearing there as yourself.
Yes.
Because you had appeared there as Carol Channing.
That's right.
And Carol Channing is next up on our list of your 12 favorite show tunes. So talk about Carol and Hello Dolly.
Well, my introduction to Carol Channing was, again, being that child of 60s and 70s television, mm-hmm. Lucille Ball performing as Carol Channing mm-hmm. on The Lucy Show. I didn't realize that Carol Channing was a real person. But I mimic everything that I saw on television. And I would mm-hmm. do lunchtime concerts in my high school. Tells you the kind of kid I was. And I would do these concerts, and I was doing my version of Lucille Ball doing Carol Channing. Eventually, I discovered that Carol Channing was a true living, breathing person from her television special with Pearl Bailey, her appearances on Muppets, you know, Love Boat, all those other specials. And the more I got to know her, the more I fell in love with her. So moving ahead, I come to New York. The first time I saw her, I overheard her tell Helen Hayes, of all people, that she was going to be having lunch at Sardi's. And I ran to Sardi's and asked if I could get a table next to her. I said, I'm a friend of hers. And I know there's no room at her table. They sat me. So, and years later, I'm having lunch with Carol Channing at the Boat Slip. At the Boathouse in Central Park. As time would go on, because of my 20 years performing as Carol, Carol and I became very good friends. I stayed at her home in Palm Springs. Everyone, Google Richard Skipper Carol Channing. There are thousands of photos out there. Mm-hmm. I am just the luckiest guy in the world that I had her as a dear friend. The phone calls, the letters, the time that we spent together mm-hmm. is something that I will cherish as long as I live. Because if anyone had ever told me, growing up in South Carolina, that this Broadway icon legend would be a friend, mm-hmm. I don't think that I would have ever believed them, at least on the level that it became.
Well, here she is now, Carol Channing in Hello Dolly.
Looking swell, Manny, I can tell. Danny, you're still glowing, you're still crowing, you're still going strong. I feel the room swaying, for the band's playing, one of my old favorite songs from way back when. So bridge that gap, fellas, find me an empty lap, fellas, darling, I'll never go away again. Of 14th Street and into my personal haze. But now that I'm back in the lights of 14th Street, tomorrow will be brighter than the good old days.
Those good.
Let's thank my lucky star. You're looking great, Stanley. Lose some weight, Stanley. Dolly's overjoyed and overwhelmed and overpowered.
I hear the arms.
Find me a vacant knee, fellas.
Dolly will never go away again.
So we're going to move from Carol Channing to another woman who I think a lot of people look at as an icon, and that is Liza Minnelli.
And yes,
but you picked the theme from New York, New York.
I picked that, obviously, as I said, 1977, when New York, New York came out. And before Frank Sinatra, everyone, it was like Kelly with this song. And every time I would hear the song on the radio, and yes, we heard this song on the radio in those days, all I kept thinking about was the fact that in 2 years, I'm going to go to New York. And so the fact, and Liza, I have to say, never became a friend of mine. but the number of times that I've seen her in concert, I probably have seen Liza in concert more times than any other person. I will say that when she turned 40, I was doing singing telegrams, and I sent myself, I was working for a company called Eastern Onion, and I sent myself to Liza Minnelli for her birthday. And I sang, she was doing the Rink. I went backstage in her dressing room. She was hysterical. She loved it, thank God. And she invited me as her guest to come and see the show that night. And I ended up seeing the Rink 6 times, and more than any other show, other than, I think I saw Jerry's Girls 6 times with Cheetah Rivera. And, but Liza and Cheetah also, I don't think I have any of Cheetah's songs picked, but she also is another favorite of mine that I've seen those two icons more than any other entertainer on stage.
So here is Liza Minnelli from the soundtrack to the motion picture, New York, New York, singing the title song.
Start spreading the news, I'm leaving today. I wanna be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray and step around the heart of it. New York, New York, I wanna wake up in the city that doesn't sleep, to find I'm a king of the hill, ha, top of the heap. My little town melting away, I'll make a brand new start of it in all New York. If I can make it there, I'd make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.
We are with Richard Skipper doing his 12 favorite show tunes, not only from the world of Broadway, but also from the world of movies. And we have the next song is sort of both combo of Broadway and the movies. And it is Sweet Charity with Shirley MacLaine. So talk about the song you picked from that.
Well, actually, it's only in the movie. It was written just for the movie. The first time that I saw Sweet Charity on screen, and I heard this song. This song sums up my love of New York. This song also is in my show. And it is not a well-known song, by a lot of standards. But it really picks these iconic parts of New York. It's a great opener song for me in the film. It just, to me, it takes me back to my first day in New York. My first walk through Central Park, I met this incredible woman named Millie Brown. I called her the unsinkable Millie Brown, by the way. I met her at my first audition in New York. My first audition for anything was Stardust Memories, the Woody Allen film. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it, but Millie became a good friend. And so every Sunday, Millie and I would get together. And we had there was no sexual relationship, but it was almost like a Harold and Maude type of relationship. She took me under her wing. She was an anti-Mame type of a character. And every Sunday we would get together and she would introduce me to something new in New York. My first pastrami sandwich, my first time on the Staten Island Ferry, my first time going to the Statue of Liberty, going up in the Empire State Building for the first time. The first Broadway show that I saw was Oklahoma in 1979. Mm-hmm. Millie was with me when I saw it. So many first, and that's what that song symbolizes for me.
So from the motion picture of Sweet Charity, we are going to hear Shirley MacLaine with My Personal Property.
Today I feel New York is really my personal property, right down Broadway to City Hall. Every supermarket, every 5 and 10, all of Lincoln Center and the great UN, they're all my personal property. The zoo in Central Park is merely my private menagerie. I've carved my name on every tree. From Yonkers Raceway to Bowling Green, I own everything around and in between. It's all my personal property. The planetarium is mine alone. The old aquarium I also own. And since I feel today New York is really my personal property, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. Since I like you very much, so very, very much, I'm gonna split it with you. Since I like you very much, so very, very much, I'm gonna split it with you, with you, with you.
Well, you can't have a 12 favorite show tunes list without at least something from Sondheim. So we have probably the most Broadway of Broadway songs by Stephen Sondheim, and that is Broadway Baby from Follies. So why did you pick this one?
Well, I discovered a place in New York called the Piano Bar. It was at 67th and Broadway. A wonderful man named Houston Allred was there. And every Thursday night was their Broadway night. Cast of Broadway shows would come in and they would all get up and they would all perform songs from the shows. And it was just this wonderful, open, welcoming atmosphere. And I would just go just to enjoy myself. And then one night Houston comes over and he says, "Do you sing?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, why don't you get up and do something?" And I said, "Well, I don't really have anything prepared." And he opened what they used to call fake books, and he opened it up. And I said, "Oh, I know this one." And it was Broadway Baby. And so I got up, and that was the first song that I sang in front of an audience where I was appearing as myself and not as a character. Mm-hmm. And that opened my eyes. It opened a whole world to me of the world of cabaret. And that's where it all began for me. And so when I hear this song, again, it takes me back to those moments. Piano Bar, 67th and Broadway, Houston, Ole Red.
Well, we are going to hear, you left it up to me to as to which version to play, but I did get your approval before we started talking. We are going to hear from the Paper Mill Playhouse production of Follies. We're going to hear Kay Ballard, one of my favorites, and also I know one of your favorites, singing Broadway Baby.
I'm just a Broadway baby, walking off my tired feet, pounding 42nd Street to be in a show. Broadway baby, learning how to sing and dance, waiting for that one big chance to be in a show. I'd like to be on some marquee. Oh, twinkling lights, a spark to pierce the dark, from Battery Park to Washington Heights. Someday, maybe, all my dreams will be repaid. Hell, I'd even play the maid to be in a show. Say, Mr. Producer, I'm talking to you, sir. I don't need a lot, only what I got, plus a tube of grease paint and a follow spot. I'm a Broadway baby, slaving at the 5 and 10, dreaming of the great day when I'll be in a show. Broadway baby, making rounds all afternoon, eating at a greasy spoon to save on my dough. My tiny flat, there's just my cat, a bed and a chair. Still I'll stick it till I'm on a bill all over Times Square. Broadway baby, walking on my tired feet, out before Second Street to be in a show.
So we are now up to your last of your 12. Yes.
May I interrupt before we go to
the next? Of course. Of course.
Why did you pick this version? I'm just curious. I was very fortunate enough to see this production, and I saw Kay Ballard perform this. But why did you choose this
Because there's so many different versions of it. But at the same time, I don't always want to use the original Broadway cast recording. I love the original Broadway cast recording, especially the remastered version. But I've played that so many times on this radio show. I like to spotlight other recordings. And of all people, I think people kind of forget what an incredibly dynamic, wonderful performer Kay Ballard was. And to me, it was sort of like the perfect meeting of artist and song, because I just think she just embodies everything that is Broadway Baby in a lot of ways. Do you know what I mean?
She certainly was. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why I picked the Kay Ballard version, because I love Kay, and Like I said, I don't think she gets as much of her due because everybody's so familiar with her from her later television work that they kind of forget that she was such an incredible, not only cabaret performer, but also, you know, Broadway performer.
Well, she epitomizes the song because if you look at the trajectory of her career, mm-hmm. there were so many almost in her mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. Maybe This Time was written for Kay Ballard.
Right.
And so many other opportunities where it almost happened, but then it went in another direction. My Coloring Book, so many other opportunities that just somehow slipped her by. Mm-hmm. And there's a great documentary about her. And all of that is covered in the documentary. So I say thank you for choosing that version because it does epitomize not only the song, but her career.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are now indeed up to the 12th of your 12 favorite, quote unquote, show tunes. But then, like you said, this is sort of like the soundtrack of your life. And the last song you picked is It's a Wonderful World. Mm-hmm. So tell us about this song and this version.
First of all, Louis Armstrong. I just absolutely love him. This song makes me tear up every time I hear this song. Again, when my husband, Dan, and I got married, we live in New York State, just outside of New York City. When it was legal to get married in New York, we had been together 21 years. Mm-hmm. We were one of the first 100 couples to get married in New York. And we chose this as our wedding song. So as everyone was entering into the space, that was the song that we had a small band playing for us. That was the song that they were playing. It also epitomizes, I think, who I am. And I try to go through life with a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. One of the lyrics of the song is when people are saying, hello, they're really saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially in today's world, we need a lot more of that. And I think that people are very quick these days to make judgments. People are quick to attack. People are quick to not to get to know each other. Mm-hmm. And this song to me epitomizes, a wonderful world in which we all do get along and we all do love each other. And that's the message that I would love to leave everybody with.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry, them grow, they learn much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful.
So we just heard Louis Armstrong doing It's a Wonderful World. It was the 12th of Richard Skipper's 12 favorite show tunes, or the soundtrack. I'm going to call the show the soundtrack of your life, because that really is what this is all about. It's been such a treat chatting with you. I want to remind people that you are going to be at the Post Office Cafe in Provincetown on August 5th, so they can see you in person, which is fantastic. And they can also find you on the web. I'll make sure to get your website up there also, so people can find you and see what you're up to. But I'm so happy you took some time to talk to me today.
I want to say thank you, because I love the premise of this show. Mm-hmm. And what you do is wonderful. And whoever came up with the brainchild, and I think you did.
I did, yes. You know, all those 21 years ago.
It's 21 years. wonderful show, and I love it. And I'm a huge fan of yours.
Thank you. It's
such a treat for me. So thanks again.
Well, never fear, folks, because Richard Skipper is going to take us out with another song, because he said, well, here's my list, but I also have a bonus track. So as the bonus track, you pick something from Pete's Dragon. So tell people what you picked and why you picked.
It's a Brazzle Dazzle Day. Again, it's the optimism. It's about being upbeat. It's about being positive. I've often said that I believe that if everyone began every day with a show tune, there'd be no strife in the world. And I have a morning mix of songs that I listen to every morning. They're on random on my device. I won't mention it because it'll go off. It's literally how I start my day each day. Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist Way, great book, everyone. I get up, I do my morning pages as I'm listening to my morning mix of. And they're all positive, upbeat songs. And that's how I begin my day every day.
Well, as we say goodbye to Richard Skipper, we're going to wish everybody a very razzle-dazzle day here from the Broadway Radio Show.
It's a razzle-dazzle day. So throw off the past and everything in it. That's the razzle-dazzle way. Enjoying your time from minute to minute, running through the sand without your shoes on.
Shoes on.
Making sure that you don't keep your blues on.
Finding a boat we can cruise on.
It's a razzle dazzle day when you think of love and never of sorrow. That's the do your work now and take off tomorrow.
Flying through the air, you don't need wings on.
Wings on.
Climb right up and feel the thrill it brings on.
Rock with the wind as it sings on.
Ride higher and higher and glide above the clouds. Free, no one to catch us or slow us. Even the birds are below us. It's a razzle-dazzle day, a lifetime of joy in just a few hours. All our razzle-dazzle years have just begun. We'll follow the sun and replay this razzle-dazzle day. Ride higher and higher and glide above the clouds. Free, no one to catch us or slow us. Even the birds are below. A lifetime of joy in just a few hours. All our brazzle-dazzle years have just begun. We'll follow the sun and replay.